Hello, everyone, and welcome, ladies, gentlemen, and NBs, to Warida Show's second stream. This is our podcast series about Gifiven, Fiven, Given, Episode 5. It's Given, Episode 5. I am the tongue-tied, stuttering, subtle doctor, and with me, as always, Warida Show stalwart, returning and ever-present champion, King of the North, and any other cardinal direction, Shadon.
Can I just point out something, folks? Can I just... I just have to say this. I have to get this off my chest. Like I've been enjoying Given thus far. I really have. But it has done me a massive service today because I rewatched episode 5 following watching 3 episodes of, you know, fucking Akikan, the fucking soda waifu show. The possibly most turgid piece of shit I have ever witnessed in my entire life. It was the most incredible palate cleanser to have rewatched episode 5 after that. So if nothing else, no matter what happens at this point, like if the show literally fares off a cliff, it has kept me sane. It has done that for me. Holy shit. But yeah, you can look forward to me talking about that in the near future. I've got 9 more episodes of that abomination to cover. But anyway, yes, we're here to talk today about Given episode 5, The Reason. Just something quick to note, by the way, before we get started, is that it's been made aware to me that the episodes of Given are named after songs. My understanding is that these are British...
Please don't say what I think you're going to say about the origin of the name of this song.
Well, I had a Google search for it, and the only one that came up was Hoobastank.
No!
I knew it! Air horns going off. I knew it.
No.
I knew it.
The shittiest song. Oh, I hate it so much. So bad.
And that's been a great podcast. Oh. Thank you very much for joining us, folks. Have a fantastic evening.
And the reason is you.
That was a very faithful rendition of that song, dog. Well done.
So bad. It's so bad. At least next week's we're going to get a song named after a quality band.
Mm-hmm.
Next week is Creep.
Yes, by Radiohead.
Indeed. Well, I'm sorry that, you know, is it Akikan?
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't have to dignify it by actually getting its name correct, if I'm quite honest.
I'm sorry the Soda Waifu Show is... has got you down. Thank you to the lovely patrons out there who have requested it and, you know, heaped suffering upon Warida Show. We always, you know, enjoy that. At least I'm enjoying it right now.
Yeah, thanks.
and you too, listener, if you're not a patron, you know, you can, but by being a member of our tier bando of patrons, you too can, you know, heap fiery coals upon us by requesting terrible anime that we have to then cover in podcast form.
Mm-hmm.
What a delightfully tempting service that we're offering here, right? But Given, as you pointed out, has been the pure water to act as the palate cleanser and get that syrupy, kind of tinny taste of soda out of your mouth.
Tasted more like leaded paint to me.
To get that just undesirable taste out of your mouth, we have Given here,
mm-hmm.
And you know, if you're just tuning in suddenly for episode 5, and you haven't heard our previous ones, this format is slightly different than our stream of thought episodic coverage. In that show, we take time to run down a plot summary and maybe talk about some. The creators behind the show, but we're just looking at the art itself this time and skipping the summary and just diving right into discussion. So Shadon, I will throw it to you.
Okay.
To kick off our talks here.
All right then. So first thing I'm going to talk about today, and I have talked about this concept before, but not about Given specifically, is the inner monologue. So if you happen to have listened to our Shield Hero cast, in which I also got very angry and very pissed off, because I think that's my mess here these days. Anyway, I discussed the idea of the inner monologue in that particular show and how it was used very, very poorly, basically to no effect whatsoever. Given, however, showing once again how things are done, does this differently. For context, I will need to just sum up some of the plot very briefly of this episode, but I'll only keep this brief. Is it Haruki or Haruka? I can't remember. I think it's Haruki, isn't it?
Oh boy, I think it's Haruki.
Yeah.
But I also always forget.
Yeah, Haruki, he and Akihiko return back to Haruki's apartment so Akihiko can stop the night because he's been drinking and he can't drive home because he was on his motorbike. Not that that really matters to him in the end, because he seems to, you know, sober up in the space of 2 hours or so. Like, I don't know what the law is in Japan over there, but you can't drink the night before and drive the following morning and get all the alcohol in your bloodstream. You will get docked for it, but then again, Akihiko doesn't seem like he gives two shits about that, so whatever. But anyway,
he's just like, look, I can drive straight now. I won't be suspicious.
So while this is all going on, Haruka is giving a... fuck's sake. Haruki is giving an inner monologue to us, the audience, about how he first met Akihiko and how he eventually fell in love with him. Like, that's not even, like, you know, subtextual. That is literally what is said. And
man, don't make the show gay, Shadon. Don't. Can we please not do that?
Do you not like political things, Doc? Do you hate the idea of politics in your fiction and your media?
I mean, it's just such a, like, libcuck thing to do. Like, it's just everything, because, like, the SJWs have infiltrated Japan now.
Yes.
And it's just in everything.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, when some people say where are we dropping boys, they mean a Fortnite game, but me, I mean to infiltrate Japan and, you know, pervert its,
yes,
you know,
exactly,
to pervert its agendas. Naturally.
Yep.
But anyway.
Which writer's room we dropping in?
Exactly. But anyway, so that happens, and after that all then concludes, Akihiko, of course, wakes up, sobers up, and drives home. And this is when we get the reveal that there's someone living in Akiko's own apartment, whose name is not revealed yet, but they seem
secret
very comfortable.
The boyfriend.
Quite possibly. Could be, you know, but seems quite familiar with him otherwise.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Here's the thing to note, though, right? First off, let's talk about Haruki's inner monologue just on its own. When I talk about in Shield Hero, the idea of the inner monologue is that it often acts as a fourth wall break. It's something, you know, that is used to convey information to the audience that the characters can't or won't divulge to other characters within the fictive world. So, essentially, Haruki is, like, telling us of his feelings to Akihiko, but bear in mind that Akihiko is in that same room when this is happening, when he's having his hair, like, you know, tied back up. You can immediately see that there's, of course, you know, a reluctance or an inability to tell Akihiko how he feels, but that he wants to at the same time because he is willing to confess it to someone, to us, the audience, specifically. So that's neat in its own right. That, you know, gives us an insight to his own, you know, feelings, but also reveals his reluctance to get them out there into the wild. But then let's consider this in the wider context of what happens afterwards. The show pays deliberate attention to Akihiko's, like, journey home and, like, the various steps to gain to that point, including going to his apartment door. Now, quick pop quiz for you here, Doc. Did Akihiko have any inner monologue in this episode?
No.
Nope. Not a Scooby about it. Not a damn thing. And I think this is a deliberate contrast between the two of them. Like, the Haruki is desperate, like, you know, to get some sort of feeling out there and therefore has to even relay it to, you know, an audience that he does not necessarily know even exists. It's just his own self, like, you know, in the self to try and, you know, keep that thought alive. Whereas whatever situation Akihiko is in with this gentleman whose name we don't know yet, he, conversely, seems very comfortable with that because he doesn't need to relay who that is to us or any information about, like, you know, any apprehension about going back at this particular hour, you know, waking this particular person up. It's just time spent, you know, seeing him journey home without any comment of any sort. And I think, again, that's a very deliberate contrast between the two guys there. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that was good. I didn't think about the lack of Akihiko's inner monologue as intentional in that sort of way, but that's really neat. Think we'll get one from him in a future episode?
Maybe,
like a
maybe
kind of a point of view.
Yeah,
sort of deal.
I am of the opinion it must be intentional because, I mean, if you were constructing the scene filmmaking-wise, if you wanted to show Akihiko, like, you know, going home, you could do it simply with two shots. One of him getting on his bike, and, you know, leaving Haruki's apartment, and then one of him getting off his bike. We as the audience can then, you know, this is stuff that, like, was done in, like, Battleship Potemkin, of all things, way back when. That's, like, what the earliest, like, Russian film period had brought this up. But, like, that's the most basic and simple way you could do that for the sake of time, which is simply just to, you know, show getting on the bike and getting off, in the same way that you could show, like, a plane taking off from an airport and then landing. You don't need to show the journey in between if the journey is not relevant. But it's relevant here, in my opinion, because you get that contrast of, you know, Haruki laying it all out to us as the audience, whereas Akiko's calm, like, you know, silence, mental silence even, you know, shows them as, you know, having different mindsets on their own relationships and how they act.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. did you feel sort of that you could relate to Haruki in any way, like them?
Don't even get me started on the innumerable amount of times in my life where I thought to myself, I really like this lady. I think this lady's awesome. And guess what? It ain't getting out of this fucking skull, that's for sure. It's happened more times than I can care to mention, but it's like I said in one of our previous given episodes, like, romance is for everyone. This is a relatable feeling for, I would argue, everyone, regardless of their orientation or gender. Like, how many times, you know, have you just wanted to, like, I'd love to tell her how I feel, or him, or, you know, etc. But you can't, or you won't, because of fear or paranoia, whatever you might call it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I just, like, I love that scene when the first time Akiko comes over, and he's Haruki's like, okay, I need just a moment, not to actually tidy up, but to, like, sort of squat down on the floor, put his head in his hands, and just sort of scream.
Yeah, like, he needs a moment to breathe, like, because this is, like, a very intimate thing. Indeed, there is a lot of intimacy in this episode that I really appreciated that wasn't explicitly sexual. Like, you'd think to yourself, you know, that if it was going to be a boiler thing, they would go straight to, like, you know, kissing, or even perhaps a little further than that. And indeed, there is mention, and this actually kind of caught me by surprise, just for how plainly it was stated, like, you guys had sex? I'm like, holy crap, they're just treating it as a normal thing. I mean, granted, the guy is, like, angry that the act itself happened, but I got the impression from the way it was portrayed that it was, you know, not a question of, you know, two guys, it was just more that this particular people, these particular two individuals had done it. And so I was really impressed there. But, like, the intimate elements of this episode I really appreciate. For one, let's talk about, like, the harebrained thing. Now, unfortunately, I can't really relate to this. Oh my god, I need a toupee. I need a hair transplant. But, like, for me, like, part of being intimate with someone is not necessarily just, you know, simply things like kissing or, you know, dare I say, how do we put it, you know, putting the sausage in the wallet. That's one way of describing it. Or the exhaust port, whatever you want to call it, you know. It doesn't need to be all that. Like, intimacy is often very contextualized, particularly around person's attributes or their likes or their wants or even their fetishes, if you want to go so far as that. And so, you know, having that long hair that he has there and having someone tie and braid it for him. Like, again, gotta imagine this because I unfortunately can't relate in that particular specific context. But that is certainly very, very intimate. And I can understand why, you know, Haruki there is, like, you know, even blushing a little bit. Like, this is something very personal for him. And then I also need to very quickly talk about the I think this is the second time that Akiko stops over, actually, which is he ends up falling on top of Haruki when, you know, he's in bed. And Haruki actually, like, reaches his arm out to try and hug and embrace him in that particular, you know, position. But he stops. Now, think of this scene, right? Like, Akiko is completely out cold. And in theory, if he did that...
Or is he?
Well, you know, could be pulling an Askeladd, could be, you know, pretending to be asleep, but not really. Anyway, so, point being, he reached out to try and, you know, like, to hug him, to hold him closer, to embrace him, but then stops himself. And, as I say, Akiko is asleep, so in theory, he possibly wouldn't have known about this or recognized this happened, and it's only a hug, you know. It's just nothing too drastic, really.
But yeah, I think that's why he stops himself, because he realizes that he's actually asleep. Like, he's fallen on top of him, and he's like, oh, is this, like, a sort of a vulnerable kind of moment here, and then as his hand lowers, he hears the snoring, and that's when he stops.
Yeah. He's respecting his consent a little bit, I would say. Granted, he was also trying to take a picture of him earlier while he was sleeping, but then he did, of course, stop himself. Right.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
The chewing in the sleep.
But this entire, like, the entirety of these scenes between these two, they felt very, very natural and very authentic. Like, you know, you're trying to figure out, you know, if your feelings for someone, whether or not you can even express them. And there might be moments in which you know, think to yourself, maybe now's a good time to do that, but then you realize that, you know, rightly, you should stop. You shouldn't do that. So, yeah, I also have to admit, I was kind of surprised that we would get this much about Haruki and Akiko. Like, they, to me, seem more like, well, supporting members of the band, quote-unquote. I didn't initially get the impression that they would potentially have as much examination devoted to their own relationship, platonic as it is right now, and potentially something more in the future, as, say, Ueno-Yama and Sato. So, yeah, I'm really glad to see these two being fleshed out in something more substantive, and I'm very curious to see what happens next, beyond simply the identity of this mystery man of mystery.
Is he going to end up, like, being his brother?
He's probably a vampire. That's my guess. Like, he's just a vampire. I mean, no coffin and all that, but, you know.
The giant sleeping bag coffin?
Possibly.
Yeah, I too am glad that we are getting all of this. It could be in service of a sort of contrast point to Haruki and not Haruki, Ritsuka and Mafuyu. In later, you know, that I think that'll serve as an interesting comparison and see what the differences are. See if there are any similarities. You know, maybe. This one may remain unrequited, and our leading character's budding romance will not. Who's to say? Can I talk about something that I enjoyed in this episode from a storytelling point of view?
Go on.
Was the airplane?
Ah, the good old airplane.
Yeah. In a couple different scenes, starting at about, I think a third of the way through the show, anytime there's like a window in the background or even the foreground, showing the sky, we see an airplane, that has flown across and we see a vapor trail behind said airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I really like how this imagery dovetails with the idea that's especially gotten across in the montage of this episode that, you know, progress in relationships, progress in life, progress in the band, things in life moving forward quickly, things changing, and the fact that, like, you know, we have the character Ueno-Yama that's like recognizing it. I think he's reflecting on, you know, like, oh, you know, Mafuyu can smile. And boy, like, I have never been as on fire obsessed with something in so long. He's being very aware of kind of how his life and the lives of others, namely Mafuyu, are progressing. And, you know, that's just like the vapor trail behind the airplane. But also, like the airplane, we have at the end of the episode, a sort of a kind of plane crash of sorts when the lady whose name I cannot recall in art class with Ritsuka sort of drops the bomb on the airplane that is his life. Like, hey, Mafuyu was dating someone from his middle school who committed suicide, and I heard that he's part of the reason why. I think he's dangerous. And that's the engine's cut from Ritsuka's airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Total plane crash. And so, I just appreciated how that imagery kind of reinforced what some of the elements of the storytelling were going for.
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly there. I did enjoy also the level of the, you know, whole plane flying overhead joke that was running for there, where you know, do you think Sato likes you? And Onoyama goes back to him, I don't think he hates me, in that kind of, like, you know, incredibly dense as concrete kind of response. Like, no, we don't mean like, we mean like. That kind of like. Yeah. Oh, you silly, silly bastard. But yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly. That was a good use of that as a metaphor throughout the show. Okay, next point from me. Let's think. Oh, yeah. Let's actually talk about Sato and basketball, of all things. Let's talk about let's talk about some three-pointers here. Let's get some three-point shots in. So, context again. Sato ends up taking part in like a casual basketball game because Ueniyama is dead. He just keeps dying and coming back to life. Like, the true, you know, because he's just too tired. The true millennial amongst all of us, really. I mean, he's definitely capturing that spirit quite well. So, the two of Ueniyama's friends, who I don't think are even named, you know, invite him along to this game, and he goes along, and Ueniyama then finds him at the basketball game, and Sato is just, like, making, you know, long shots like they're nothing. Like, he's doing some Michael Jordan stuff, you know. I think Space Jam might have been his favorite film as a kid, quite possibly.
His J is wet. He's got it working, the jumper. It's just nothing but net, constant, like, no lucky shooters bounces, just draining shit from everywhere.
Exactly. And the reason I bring this up and mention it happens twice in this episode, by the way, is that this is something that Sato, like, wanted to do. Like, he, you know, he's invited along, and he didn't have to go, but he did. And it turns out he's very, very good at this playing basketball. Now, it makes me wonder, then, if that's meant to be, you know, a warning sign that he is doing the band thing, not necessarily because he might want to, or that because it's where his skills are most suited. I mean, yeah, he's a good singer from what we've seen thus far, but he's also good at basketball. So is that a question, like, you know, of where he might be best suited to belong? I wonder.
I know. You know, part of... and I don't think this was either conscious for Ueniyama, or indeed was expressed in the show, but part of me wonders if you know, if he were to see Mafuyu doing this, right, like laughing and being really good at something else, like if some sort of jealousy wouldn't kind of crop up, like that Mafuyu is not just his own, not just his anymore, like, because before Mafuyu was this sort of, you know, caged bird, and Ueniyama kind of has nursed him up to this point of self-confidence, and he's got him in his band, and Mafuyu is, like, totally within Ritsuka's universe, but we see him here doing things, like, on his own outside that, and, you know, I think it would be a very human response in some ways for him to be a bit negative about this.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Do you have any more talking points, Doc?
Yeah, sure. Which, I just, the basketball stuff was just so funny. I mean, it was incredibly good. I really, really love that. But I guess, so, there's one line in the show that really, I don't know, it really stuck in my brain. And again, this is something, like, maybe I'm reading a lot into this here, but go with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this really occurred to me because we've recently watched Sarah's and Mai.
Babe.
And, like, in that show, there is a lot is said and illustrated about the two otter cops, whose names escape me at the moment because...
Ryo and Mabe.
Multi-syllable Japanese... Thank you! They're not even multi-syllable Japanese names. I don't even have that excuse.
Congratulations, Ryo, you played yourself.
I know, I did. I totally did. So Ryo and Mabe, like, the show speaks a lot about society's kind of constraints upon them as gay men, that they have to kind of play these certain roles. They're the freedom of expressing their identities in the ways that they would want to is restricted.
Hmm.
And in this episode of Given here, when Haruki sees Uenoyama, right? He's the prodigy. He's an incredible guitar player. But he tries to talk to him after the show, and one of his Uenoyama's fellow band members kind of begins arguing with Uenoyama, and they just kind of turn and walk away, and he's yelling at him, and Haruki says, "Boy, this is what a waste. You know, if he was in my band, I'd give him a lot more freedom."
Hmm.
And, you know, that made me think about this as this whole idea of music and performing your music as a metaphor, right, for expressing not just your individuality in terms of humanness, but in terms of your, like, gender identity, your sexual identity. And I'm reading my notes. So, like, Ritsuka has, like, a lot of frustration with his current band, right? Like, he's getting yelled at here. The implication is, like, he's not sticking to the structures, the agreed upon structures of the performance, right? Like, you need to play this way for this long, et cetera, et cetera. And he keeps, like, pushing the boundaries or bursting out of those boundaries. And, like, here Haruki is saying, like, I wouldn't constrain that if he was part of my band. Like, I would let him play his music the way he wanted to play it and express himself in this totally free way.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of this to say is, yeah, to just repeat my main point is that, like, this line really got me kind of considering this whole way of looking at music and musical performance in this show and freedom of expression and kind of what it can mean for these, like, gay young men, you know, beyond, like, in kind of in abstraction and not just about the music, but as, like, a metaphor for different, for expressing these other things that are important to who they are.
Hmm. Absolutely. All right. So for my next talking point, let's talk about the ending scene between Uenoyama and the lady whose name I also can't remember because I simply have the memory of a goldfish. Although, actually, that's apparently a Mervin myth, so maybe that's the wrong metaphor. Let's just say I have a bad memory. Let's just go with that. This, again, is an editing thing, and this is also another way in which I think Given is really handling its storyboarding and editing and shot composition magnificently. Like, there's genuine craft behind this. Like, someone's got an intent to try and help us communicate this, the messages of the show, over to us. So, this is, as Doc has said, the scene in which Uenoyama is informed about Sasso's supposed history. I say supposed because while we, of course, have certain pieces of the puzzle that he isn't aware of, we don't know exactly what the events were that led up to Yuki's suicide. And it is indeed, to me, true that the lady in question is using the truth or the history as a weapon to try and drive a wedge in, because she has her own feelings towards Uenoyama. I think that's not unreasonable to make a judgment there, because,
yeah,
well, she doesn't know the truth as much as anyone else does, really. But anyway, what I need to talk about here is that, apart from the airplane stuff that you mentioned, take a look at the shots of this scene and how they're all composed together. There's only one shot in the entirety of this conversation in which Uenoyama and that lady are framed in the same shot. You can see both of them. There's one in which you get an over-shoulder shot for Uenoyama, but you barely otherwise see him. The rest of them are just both of them on their own, including, like, them both being in the bottom left and right corners of the screen, mm-hmm. with a lot of empty space mm-hmm. otherwise around them. And I think that this is illustrative of their two mindsets, like, that for as much as, like, you know, she is saying this, like, on the surface to help protect Uenoyama, that is naturally happening. It's for her own purposes. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not a part of her thinking on this in that kind of sense. And in turn, well, we know that Uenoyama is not really all that interested in her in any given way. Oh, there's another one for the tip jar.
Hey.
So I think this deliberate segregation of them, you know, from each other in terms of the shot composition and where they're framed is very deliberate to show, like, both their mindsets towards each other and try and help us get to the truth of why she's doing this. And also there's a lot of, like, again, very strong close-up shots, like, as the reveal happens, that helps things feel very jumbled, like, and very chaotic as, you know, the sudden emotion of the revelation sweeps over Inuyama. So, again, a lot of very, very intentional craft and decision-making here in terms of the filming, rather than just simply being, say, shot, reverse shot, or just, well, we're going to have a long shot of them speaking in the same frame, like, you know, for a solid 2 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like, we totally have established and seen that, given the people behind it, like, they take more care than that. That is something we should not expect from the show. Like, if they were to do that, I would feel quite cheated at this point.
I would too.
They set the bar of expectation much higher.
Absolutely. Do you have anything
so question
else?
For
oh,
you.
Go on, sorry.
Yeah, well, question. Do you think, circling back to the thing we talked about at the beginning, Akihiko and Haruki, do you think that Akihiko is being mean in any way? Like, how aware do you think he is of Haruki's feelings? Do you think there's any leading on that's happening? I mean, certainly we see in the scene when Haruki burns, like, singes his hair, and Aki is holding it and talking to him. I mean, maybe we're just seeing it from a sort of hyper-stylized, like, point of view, like a very intense point of view of Haruki, but, like, I don't know if we're not that really felt. Maybe that's just the way they joke with each other, and maybe that's all Aki
he goes into. It could be banter. But the thing about banter, though, often between people who otherwise might be interested in each other, is that you can then conflate that banter with being genuine interest. There could be that ambiguity to it. And I think that, you know, maybe that's the case on Akiko's part, where it is just banter to him. But for Haruki, of course, he may see it as something more. But then again, he's operating on confirmation bias anyway, because he already has had strong feelings for Akiko for a very long time. It's complicated, man! My God, relationships are difficult. Who'd have fucking thought? Breaking news at 10, back to the studio.
It is, and, you know, I think if Haruki continues, you know, I think at the beginning he says that ever since he sort of knew he liked Akihiko, in which that moment is really cool, the way that they shoot, the different shots and the cutting of, like, the first time they show Haruki's eyes meeting Akihiko's, it's very slow. To indicate, I think, that, like, the moment for Haruki is, like, a very long and meaningful, significant kind of moment. And then they kind of recut it and show it immediately, where, like, they show Akihiko sort of looking at him really quickly, and then some burnt-up cigarette falling off the end of Haruki's smoke, and... to me, that just said, like, in reality, this moment lasted, you know, a millisecond.
Yeah.
A few. But, like, as far as the significance to a person's life, it was huge.
Yeah.
And so, but when they, ever since they first met, like, he said that he's waiting for something to happen. And I think he's going to have to... Or I suspect he's going to have to go, like, move beyond that. 'Cause I don't know if he just continues to wait for something to happen if, like, his, you know, this might pass him by if he sort of continues with that mantra.
The close-upness as well of the, of that shot, like, it supports in place of the intimacy of it, like, when you're that close to someone, like, you know, you're in their physical space even, that's what it's meant to make us as the audience feel. To get back to your original question, I think something you need to distinguish when it comes to this kind of behavior is if it's deliberate or unintentional. Because you can very easily, you know, do things that, you know, you have no malicious intent. towards a person, but can still cause them harm, or can, you know, over time, you know, lead them the wrong way or give them the wrong impression. Now, that isn't also necessarily your fault, I should stress. It does take two to tango in that regard. You know, you can only, your actions always have to be interpreted in some way or another by someone. So I think in Akihiko's case, like, the very cavalier and casual way in which he asks for, you know, to stay over, I think it's a case of him being so familiar and comfortable with Haruki as a friend that he feels it's all right for him to ask that. I mean, I, to give my own experience, like, I actually literally asked a friend of mine at a tournament out yesterday to give me a lift home because it was on the way, and I paid him for that. But then you might still want to maybe be self-critical about it and say, well, should you really be relying necessarily on that person to take you back because you wanted to stay longer and have another pint or two? Same kind of deal, funnily enough, as Akihiko. So I think that it may be a question of, you know, not realizing what's happening here. Like, not realizing, firstly, I think, Haruki's feelings, but also secondly, that, you know, that just because the, you know, the privilege of being able to stop over has been offered before, maybe he shouldn't necessarily exploit it all the time. Maybe he shouldn't bring his bike out if he wants to get pissed. You know, just a thought. So I think that in Akihiko's case, I don't think there's a single shred of maliciousness to it, but I think it's just maybe a bit of ignorance, perhaps. That would be my...
I hope so.
That would be my assessment.
Yeah. I would like to think so as well. I would like to think so as well. So those are my main discussion points that I have. Do you have anything else?
I'll mention very quickly that we do learn in this episode the name of Ueniyama's new band, The Seasons.
Oh, right. Right, and because, you know, and I only caught that watching it the second time for whatever reason. I guess I had looked away or looked down to take notes.
Yep.
But, we got a good comment on YouTube that pointed that out.
I have it on my screen, actually, so I want to give a quick shout out to... I'm going to probably completely butcher this, so again, apologies in advance for being a dirty, filthy British gaijin, but Wushad Sweeban? Sweeban? I don't know. I'll roll with that. You know who you are.
yep.
Pointed out that all of the various band members' names are related to seasons in some way. So we've got Yuki as snow/happiness, and then Mafuyu as midwinter, so still winter. Haruki is spring, Akiko is autumn, and Ritsuka, or Ueniyama, is summer, due to various elements of their names when you take them out. So yeah, we literally have the four main band members have, you know, the names of the seasons in them, so it's quite appropriate. One might wonder, you know, if they were self-aware of that or not, but it certainly fits. and that can then also, in turn, you know, give us some insight into their relationships, because you'll note that, for example, Ueniyama and Mafuyu, like, you've got him, Ueniyama as summer and Mafuyu as winter, and that actually, I think, reflects their personalities quite well, because you can see that Ueniyama is very, very, like, extroverted and very, you know, passionate. You know, he's very fiery, dare I say. And Mafuyu, like, he's not cold or cruel or callous, like you might say of winter, but he is very, you know, he's very chilled out. He's very introverted. He doesn't seem to have a lot of activity going on. Like, he doesn't say very much. He's not, like, constantly, like, you know, yelling at the top of his voice or getting fired up about much. He's very, very chill. So I think that that's...
Is he also coming?
Oh, no.
Because that's what they always say about winter.
Yeah,
winter,
but you'd have to say in the context of the show, you bastard. I've got a dirty mind, I'm sorry.
I know.
I'm sure he is in many, many doujins sold at Comiket this year. I'm sure. I'm totally fucking sure of it.
If you're going to do a doujin, like, there's a title for you. Winter is coming.
Okay. I think otherwise I've covered everything I want to discuss about this particular week. I say though, I'm generally quite pleased to see that we get Haruki and Akiko getting on the action in their own way and having their own little subplot develop, rather than it just strictly being, you know, them as secondary B-list cast members. So I'm glad that Givens take its time to juggle that all together. Hopefully we do start getting some more delivery on the actual backstory between Mafuyu and Yuki, though, because we're almost halfway through the season and we still have very scant info on it. The pacing seems deliberately slow, which, yeah, that's fine, you know. There's not necessarily anything wrong with a slow burn. But we do want to, you know, start having the mystery unravel a little bit. And it's not even a question, again, like I've said so many times before, of us learning the truth necessarily, but more that the actual mystery itself is confronted directly. We don't necessarily need answers right away, but rather we need the character to start taking affirmative action towards that.
Yeah, and we don't want things to have to be rushed.
Yeah. We also don't want, you know, X episode previews with, like, you know, sinister music overtones, like, as you said to me, that makes me, oh god, shit, go down! And then, no, it really, really didn't.
Seriously, last week, it was, like, so... It was pretty ominous.
Yeah.
And then a couple weeks ago, you had the one that was all about Riska grabbing the collar of Mafuyu, and it turned out to be, like, not a super conflict-heavy episode. It had its moments, and... you know what? One might think that they know what we want, and they're teasing us.
Oh, are they tying up the ponytail I don't have? Thanks, given makers, you bastards.
But next week will be interesting because we'll be at the halfway point, and maybe we can kind of take a step back and evaluate, like, you know, if we feel like we're in a good place with the show as far as the overall narrative. Hopefully, I mean, you know, Ueno Yama has been presented with this information finally. You know, the rumors have been relayed to him, and so now that he has the information, maybe we will send him his pain. As much as you don't want it, part of me doesn't want it to happen. You know, part of me, like you were saying, very much does, so we can kind of get the ball rolling on these things. Like, now Riska can talk to Mafuyu about this, and we can figure it out together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, I think that's going to do it then for Given Episode 5, : Given in Space.
Hoobastank's back.
God, no!
Is that your one of the buttons I can push whenever I need to, like, set you off? Like, if you ever threaten to, like, you know, make me watch a shitty anime, I'll just say to you back, Doc, next time you make me do that, I'll end up, like, you know, editing Hoobastank songs into every single podcast we do.
Oh, please don't do it.
I've got the sword of Damocles here, bitch!
It's so bad. Man, it's so bad. It's in my craw so much because in high school I was very into nu metal, and, you know, Hoobastank is one of those sort of late nu metal, really, you know, big band, crossover bands. It's bad, but then it also brings up the shame of, you know, me listening to things like Ultra Spank and, you know, Deftones quite a bit, whereas now I just can't do it. Okay, all right, well, everybody, this has been Second Stream, Given Episode 5. We thank you so much for joining us, our lovely patrons who make this possible.
Indeed, thank you,
we adore all of you. You know, in the Discord, you're there, we're there, we're hanging out, we're talking about shows, talking about things.
Watching,
it's a fantastic time.
Watching me gradually lose my fucking mind. That's happening. Yeah, if you want to see that happen in real time, folks, you want to see me just, like, you know, mentally disintegrate, feel free to subscribe to us for as little as $2 a month. You'll get access to our Discord. Yes. But we do have other perks as well, such as being able to post questions in our chat about the show we're currently covering, which is, in this case, is Vinland Saga. You can also then, if you subscribe to our $5 tier, actually request us to watch shows. So if you want to make me watch another awful show, please don't, but I can't ultimately stop you, so you have that right. Please do definitely check us out. Feel free to also give us a like, subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, and YouTube if you have the time, as it'll help our discoverability. But as always, thank you all very much for taking the time to join us with us covering Given, and we will indeed be back next week with Episode 6, I'm a Creep. I can't remember the rest of the lyrics, unfortunately. I haven't listened to Radio in a while. God, does that mean that, you know, we're going to get an episode later on which is going to be called OK Computer, which is where, it's like, say, Haruki makes one off Tinder?
Paranoid Android. just a rock opera episode. Yeah, no, okay, I just processed what you said and got it. What doesn't happen? Oh, my sweet God. He's at Shadon 1010. I'm at The Subtle Doctor. Thanks, everyone, so much for listening. Embrace each other, everyone, to the ends of the universe.
Good night.